Have you ever longed to escape reality? Or fantasized about stepping into someone else's shoes, even for just a little while? Hi, I'm Laura Mullen.
And I'm Chris Tolley. We host CBC's Play Me, the immersive podcast that transforms theater into addictive audio fiction. Join us for a new season and disappear into a world rich with drama, where every show delivers hypnotizing stories and unveils intriguing characters with secrets.
Play Me, wherever you get your podcasts.
This is a CBC podcast.
Hey, I'm Tom Power.
Welcome to Q. So, in order to tell you about this, like, really funny, strange, great new Canadian film that's out, I have to tell you about another movie. So, you have to know about the movie Smoke Signals. Back in 1998, the movie Smoke Signals really changed the way Indigenous people were portrayed on film. It left out, like, the stereotypes of Hollywood. It showed Indigenous folks in this really modern, authentic way. It starred Adam Beach as Victor, Evan Adams as Thomas. The two go to collect Victor's dad's ashes, and then they have this road trip that sees them reflecting on identity and on healing. So I bring all this up because throughout this movie, there are these little tiny flashbacks to when these guys were kids. And now the kid who played little Victor, like, as a kid actor, Cody Lightning, is all grown up, and he's made a new mockumentary called Hey Victor. It follows a fictionalized version of Cody, who, 25 years after his turn in Smoke Signals, tries to self-produce a sequel to the film in a desperate attempt to get his life back on track.
Yeah, I was the lead character, Victor. I was little Victor. The lead character as a kid for flashbacks.
Yeah, but he's not the protagonist. He's just the backstory.
That's the biggest part of the story is the backstory. It sets everything up. Don't you know how anything works?
This is Cody Lightning's directorial debut. It's already received great reviews and critical acclaim. It premiered at the Tribeca International Film Festival, as well as the Toronto International Film Festival. It's out now in theaters. I had a great time talking to Cody Lightning from Edmonton all about it.
Cody, welcome to the show. How are you?
Good, Tanse. Thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
And I just got the news. You nominated for a Canadian Screen Award for Best Lead Role in a Comedy. Congratulations.
Yes. I woke up this morning. My phone was... I'm like, what in the world? And a lot of people from cast and crew, congratulations, buddy, congratulations. I was like, on what? And I looked through my emails, and I'm like, oh, crap, I'm nominated. Heck yeah. We're up for Best Original Screenplay. I'm up for leading role in a comedy. And then Hannah Cheeseman, who's in Hey Victor with me, for supporting actor in a comedy.
What does that mean to you?
Oh, my gosh. This is insane. So... for me, just being an independent filmmaker, I've been an actor for over 30 years, but now I'm making my own stuff. Just to complete your project is a huge accomplishment because there's so many things that can set you back. Something can happen. Production can shut down. I've seen it several times. So just to complete your project is amazing, and it's a conquer. And to have it recognized at all these festivals that we've gone to is a bump up from that. And now to have this recognition and be nominated, it just keeps getting better and better and better. And it makes it all, like, I can't even express how much, gratitude I have and how appreciative I am of these opportunities and all the accolades that it's been getting. It's amazing.
So the film is about, I mean, a version of you, and we'll talk a little bit about how much it's a version of you in just a second, but, you know, who played little Victor in Smoke Signals, trying to get his life back on track by producing a mockumentary about, well, Smoke Signals, trying to produce a new version of Smoke Signals 2. My understanding is that this all started as a joke while you were waiting for drinks in a bar. So, like, which bar, what drinks, how did this all happen?
So not any, like, bar in particular, but, like, I was living in Boise, Idaho, in a big house with about five or six other filmmakers, and we would all help each other with our projects that we were working on. But one of my executive producers, Black Horse Low, and another good friend of mine, Ron Torres, they're really close to me. We would just, as a joke, be at a restaurant or a bar or a club or somewhere at a show. And if the service wasn't great, it'd be like, well, go smack the bartender in the face and tell him, don't you know who I am? Well, I'm Victor. Like, we would just like giggle about it amongst ourselves. Like, can you imagine getting kicked out of a casino, like security lifting you up by the waist? Like, don't you know who I am? I was Little Victor. People have no clue, but it's just funny to us. So that's where the original seed was like kind of planted. And then there was at the Imaginative Film Festival in Toronto, they were having pitches for short films. And I said, "What, you know, what if we just pitch this, you know, Victor thing, this kind of joke that we've had for how many years as a short film? We'll, I'll get like Simon Baker involved and maybe one other person, and we'll just make it about Simon and I. We'll film for like a week and just have fun with it, you know, just as a, you know, for fun." And a lot of people in that pitch session, we didn't win it, which was a bummer, but it was a blessing in disguise because a lot of people in that pitch session told me, they're like, this is more than a short film. This is a feature film or a series. This idea is so unique. It's so perfect for you because it's you.
I shouldn't tell you, but I'll tell you. I wrote the sequel. When Smoke Signals 2 comes out, game over.
So yeah, I met with Sam Miller, my co-writer and executive producer and great friend. So we went to town on the script and we got our funding. We made The Bad Boy and now here we are.
It's the making of The Bad Boy that I find really interesting because there's a sort of meta level to this story. I mean, you actually were in the original Smoke Signals and in the film, you have to, well, in the film, your character, who is also you, has to reach out to past members of Smoke Signals to try and get them on board. What strikes me interesting about this is that in order to make this film, you literally had to also reach out in real life to past people who had been in Smoke Signals and try to get them on board.
We're making a movie. I want you in it.
Who's we?
We, us, you, me, so far.
But you can't seriously be asking me to do this for you, right?
Why? Why not?
You were terrible to me. You embarrassed me. Don't you remember when I invited you to the premiere of my play? You came hammered, and you answered your phone in the middle of the second act, puked all over the stage. Everybody thought you were a part of the act.
It was hilarious. People laughed.
There was nobody laughing from my perspective.
Yeah, it was the film within a film within a film, and how many different layers and the metaverses and the universes. And Smoke Signals versus, when we were writing it, my other producers were like, "How are you sure we're going to be able to get everyone involved?" I was like, "I'll just make some phone calls." And yeah, we were able to get the majority of the cast in there. And
I mean, you were talking about people like Adam Beach and Gary Farmer. Tell me what that phone call sounded like, or when you got in touch with them to tell them you were going to make this again. Like, what was your pitch to them?
So Adam answered. He was playing video games at the time. He's like, "What's up, Dad?" And I was like, "Hey, buddy, how you doing?" "Oh, God, I'm just playing some Call of Duty." And I was like, "Nice, man, nice. Hey, I have a project that I'm pitching, and we're writing right now." He's like, "Oh, sweet, sweet." And I was like, "Yeah, man." So yeah, it's like I gave him the premise of it. Me, mockumentary. So we all play like fictionalized versions of ourselves. It's really wild, crazy, vulgar craziness. And yeah, wonder you play yourself, but we all have to be on board that we're going to be able to make fun of ourselves. Just send it over. I do anything you ask, man. And I was like, "Cool, done, click." We got Adam. How about Gary? So called Gary, same thing. He's like, "Oh, sounds interesting. Yeah, shoot it on over." And so he was on board. And yeah, that's kind of how it went. And within 1 hour of a few phone calls, I was like, "Okay, we got it locked in." And they were like, "Holy crap, you just did that."
I mean, I find it interesting that no one really needed too much convincing.
Yeah. You know, like I said, I'm in pretty good standings with the rest of the cast and crew of Smoke Signals. So they were on board.
I think less about your relationship with them, but more like the idea that they would have to make fun of themselves in order to do this. I mean, not everyone would be on board for that, but it sounds like everybody was.
Oh, yeah, 100%.
What kind of kid were you when you were in Smoke Signals?
As a character or in real life?
In real life.
Oh, so I'm originally from Edmonton, Alberta. I'm from Samson Cree First Nation in Musqueam, out here in Treaty 6 territory. But when I was 4 years old, my mom moved down to Los Angeles with my two other siblings from my mom. Down to Los Angeles, and she went to the American Academy of Dramatic Arts, which is a very prestigious performing arts school, and just kind of naturally got us involved in film and TV at a young age. So we were child actors, and we started as on like Dr. Quinn, Medicine Woman, and TNT's Geronimo in 95.
When I was young, the White Eye came and wanted the land of my people. When their soldiers burnt our villages, we moved to the mountains. When they took our food, we ate thorns. When I took a wife, they killed her and my two little girls. But in our hearts, we never surrendered.
Like old leathers and feathers, buckskin period pieces, right? Because that's all that was kind of coming out for indigenous people. And then films like Smoke Signals, you know, came out, which was contemporary.
When Victor's father walked out 10 years ago, he left behind a burning secret that consumed his family. Now, Victor is about to leave the reservation for the first time.
You guys got your passports?
But it's the United States.
That's as foreign as it gets.
On a search for the ways of his tribe.
Thomas! I'm going for help!
I did my audition for it. I got it. And that's where that came from. But I grew up in Burbank, California. And I spent my summers back home with my dad and my dad's side of the family up here in Canada on the res. And then went back for school. And then I left California when I was like 16. I moved to Idaho and just kind of tumbleweeded all over. But at that time, at that age, you know, I was just a young Native boy growing up in Los Angeles and, you know, with our family. And we did it as a family unit, right? So my mom was making films, my sister, myself, and my brother. And we all used, you know, our work to support our household. We did it as a family. So that's kind of where, you know, my life as a youngster from Smoke Signals was.
That's a different kind of responsibility when you have to, I know a couple of people like this who were like young actors, who were young actors, and sure, it was fun to be expressive and to be able to do all this work, but you were also sort of paying the bills.
Yeah, we was a family contribution, you know. But also, it was kind of tough because there weren't too many Native kids where I grew up. There was only like my family and maybe one or two others. And we didn't even know. Like a lot of kids I grew up with assumed I was Mexican or something like that. Because there was a lot of Hispanic, Armenian, black and white, and then us.
Yeah.
Tiny, small family of Natives. So I got picked on and made fun of a lot. And I used my humor. My humor as like a defense, kind of like I'm very witty, and that came from a very young age. I was the jokester and clown of the family, so I was able to joke my way out of situations a lot, and that's where I was getting put out for a lot of roles up until my mid 20s, even into my 30s. That were very serious characters, you know, crazy husband trying to kill his wife on a road trip, you know, young teenager at a mental institution with problems and, you know, all these very serious roles. And all my friends and family who know me, they're like, why aren't you doing comedies? You're constantly joking around. I was like, I'm not getting put out for that stuff.
Simon, you know, and I used to go out for a lot of the same roles when we were kids. He'd get all the traditional buckskin roles because he looks full Nietzsche. You know, he's just your typical powwow princess kid, red road, smudging, didn't drink or do drugs and powwow dance, like whatever. Great, good for you. And then there was me. I got all the, you know, normal ass parts or whatever. But, you know, I got range, so.
And then, you know, for years, people have told me, if you're not getting put out for that, make it yourself.
Yeah.
So I, you know, pulled the trigger and I'm like, let's do it then. And that's kind of the avenue I'm going down now.
Well, that last point you make is a really interesting one, right? Because it's not just that you weren't getting put out for a lot of the sort of like, you know, raunchy, dark comedies that you were sort of like mirroring the comedy of in your real life, but they also just weren't getting made. I mean, I read a quote from you that said, I mean, this movie is filthy and awesome and raunchy and wild, but I read a quote where you said, like, I want to make indigenous comedies, and that's not always going to be PG. It's not always going to be suitable for a family-friendly network, but I want to make really edgy, dark, dysfunctional comedies. What it sounds like you're saying there, and correct me if I'm wrong, is it's not just about taste, but it's also like important that that kind of movie gets made as well.
Absolutely, 100%. You know, and just like if you look at stand-up comedy, you know, I'll list three stand-up comedians. Jeff Foxworthy.
If you've been on television more than five times describing what the tornado sounded like, you might be a redneck. If you've ever cut your grass and found a car, you might be a redneck.
right?
Yeah.
Very clean, family-friendly comedy.
Yeah.
Still very hilarious. Love the guy. And then you have someone like Bill Burr, you know, real in your face.
What's that, son? Ah, we're not going to church today. F*** that. That's all a bunch of bull. God's everywhere, but I got to go down there to see him, really? And he's mad at me down there and I owe you money? Go f*** yourself.
You know, cussing and swearing and just wow, completely different type of comedy. And they're all comedians, but just different styles of comedy. Same with any type of art or music or anything. So that's kind of the avenue I'm going on, like with what I personally am going to be creating. I'll still audition and do roles, you know, for other people, however they come to me. But for what I want to create, I want real, raw, edgy, you know, sometimes make you feel a little uncomfortable.
Well, Cody, I love you, but this party sucks.
I know.
Let's get her going, right, eh?
Yes, please.
Can't finally drink at an intervention. To my son,
yeah.
Cody!
No.
Don't drink it.
But it also sounds like you might be saying, and I don't want to put words in your mouth here, that like these are not films, like Indigenous-led films, that often get made. I mean, they're the really raunchy, dark ones.
Yeah, and you know, that's the thing. I there's so many hidden gems out there. And I've seen people that fold and their projects don't get made because it doesn't – their project that they've written or their vision of what they want to make doesn't fit into what's – acceptable. It doesn't fit into the norm of what's popular now. You know, there's a lot of projects that come out that are very informative, you know, about loss of culture, language, land, identity, all of that stuff. And those are very important pieces. They need to continue to be made. However, there's a lot of other genres of projects and grittiness that aren't being showcased. And I know several people that have written projects and they're like gung-ho about it. I'm like, that is so on the edge and that's going to push, you know, push the boundaries. And then it never gets made and I'm bummed. I'm like, why? Well, I got told no for funding. And that's a big thing is funding. You can't make it without money, you know. So I want to see more of that, more of those projects. And I have a different approach, right? Because I was raised in the industry, so
right.
I'm used to rejection.
Right.
I've been rejected several times in my life, so I have a little bit thicker skin. But if you take a kid from, you know, your average kid from not just the reserve in the city or whoever, and any ethnicity or background, whatever, and, you know, they have this dream or this really cool idea and they get told, nope, door slam, that kid, you know, you can be like, screw this, I'll just go work a regular job or, you know, do something else. And it's harder for most people. But so I'm very fortunate in that way, but with my upbringing, so I, you know, I'm a little more resilient in that way. But I've seen a lot of young, you know, storytellers fold, and it's unfortunate because, you know, those are the stories that we need to be telling as well.
I'm Tom Power. You're listening to Q. Coming up, more of my conversation with Cody Lightning.
Think of your favorite one-hit wonder.
Or that overpriced toy your parents would never let you have.
Or that TV show that no one else remembers because it was canceled way too soon. Now what if we could fix it? I'm Francesca Ramsey.
And I'm DeLon Grant. And after 20 years of friendship, we are now hosting a new nostalgia podcast called Let Me Fix It.
Each episode, we'll dig into our favorite celebrities, shows, and brands of yesteryear, and then imagine what it would take to repackage them for relevance today.
Think of our show as an intervention, but with way less stakes.
So subscribe to Let Me Fix It wherever you get your favorite podcasts.
Tom Power, you're listening to Q. You're in the middle of my conversation with Cody Lightning. We've been talking about his debut feature film, Hey Victor, which is a mockumentary that follows a fictionalized version of Cody, who's down on his luck, trying to self-produce a sequel to Smoke Signals, this movie he was in when he was a kid. Up until now, we've been talking about how this idea came to him, the struggle in getting it made, sort of the meta-ness of making a film about making a film. But here's something else that's really special about Cody's story. Back home in Alberta, he spent the last 6 years of his life as a youth care worker on Enoch Cree Nation. So I wanted to know if while making this film and spending time away from that environment, if those kids were on his mind while making this movie.
Oh, 100%. Actually, in Hey Victor, some of the kids that were in my film, they're kids from the youth center. Like, yeah, I put out like a public thing on social media and just said, hey, looking for kids ages this through this that are not shy to be in front of the camera. And if you're interested, send me your stuff and we'll go from there. And so there's about 5 or 6 kids in the film that are kids that attended the youth center that I worked at.
I mean, what's cool about that is that a lot of people don't grow up in Burbank. You know, a lot of people don't grow up surrounded by, Dick Cavett. I don't know. Like, where my references live, by the way. A lot of kids don't grow up with Bob Saget in the backyard. But you know what I mean? Like, yeah. You know, to be on a set that young and to see that, like, oh, wow, this guy who was my, youth worker knows how to make a film and can make a film. That's pretty powerful.
Yeah, actually, I just got a DM from one of the kids. He was younger when I worked with him. I think he's 16 or 17 now. And he said, hey, uncle, when does your movie come out? And I said, on the 14th, there's a big screening. And then the 15th, it'll be in theaters. He goes, I'm just going to be watching in theaters. He goes, hey, that's my uncle. I used to play ball hockey with him. I was like, oh, thanks, buddy. Thanks, my bro.
When you were making this film and at some point you did pop the old VHS of Smoke Signals into the VCR and it popped up on the screen. What feelings did you get when you saw your old self in that film?
Oh, single teardrop. Single teardrop. I've seen Smoke Signals 9 million times. So, that just the whole point or the fact of, I'm not going to spoil it for anyone that hasn't seen it, but like teaching my acting classes and stuff like that. That's just, we worked so hard to make it about me, 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 me. And then, who wrote it? Who directed? Who acted in it? Me, me, me. I had no intentions on directing this film. I didn't. Like, I wanted to write it and act. And I was talking with my producers. I said, okay, I have a few people I have in mind that I really trust that could direct it. And I was looking around. I was like, why are you guys all staring at me like that? And they're like, what do you mean? Who else is going to direct this other than you? And I was like, what? And they're like, no, you're directing this. And I was like, wait, what? And they're like, oh, the film's all about you. You're getting the you credits. And I was like, oh my gosh.
Yeah, that's why you're getting the you question. That's why I'm not asking questions to you about like, hey, well, how was the DOP? It's because you were in Smoke Signals and now you made a movie about an actor trying to make Smoke Signals again. And you did make a movie. I'm not going to ask questions about craft services here. It's interesting. I don't know why you've seen Smoke Signals 9 million times, but it's interesting to me that you had to like reflect on your younger self in order to make this movie.
Yep, 100%. I love it.
You know?
Yeah, it was such a fun project to make, and I'm happy that we have had such great response from every festival we've shown it at. We haven't had one negative comment or anything bad come towards us. I was expecting maybe someone to say, I wasn't okay with this or I wasn't okay with that. As you can't please everyone, but when we had our world premiere at Tribeca Film Festival in New York and then Toronto International Film Festival, it had great response and great reviews. So I'm freaking pumped.
Well, I'm so pumped for you, and it's such a funny movie, and it's such a movie that I've never really seen before, and it caused like gut laughter from the people in this office. So, nice. Congratulations, and thanks for making the time for us.
Thank you so much.
Cody Lightning co-wrote, stars, and directs the new movie Hey Victor, which is in theaters now. The other conversation we have up today is about another movie. This one's called Knox Goes Away. And it was made by Michael Keaton, directed by Michael Keaton, who you might know from Batman or you might know from Beetlejuice. And he's here to talk a little bit about why he was interested in telling a story about a contract killer who's starting to experience symptoms of dementia. And he'll talk about his time on Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood. Go check that out. We'll see you soon. Later on.
For more CBC podcasts, go to cbc.ca/podcasts.